time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them at Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Last Saturday, it was Jan Scott's pleasure to talk to Paul Harrop, conductor, Rob Vasson, clock artist and auctioneer, composter Glenda Andrew Neal, Rosalie Hennigan from the Waiheke Library, and she talked to Carol Weitzel about Seven Jewish Children, a play for Gaza.
Yeah, The Glory of Love was the one and only David Paquette, who will be back on the island on the 30th of March playing at the Marae with the Auckland Youth Symphony Orchestra under the guidance and conductorship of... it's the Aotea Youth Symphony Orchestra. My apologies, Paul. Under the conductorship of Paul Harrop, who's joining me now. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, Jan. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. You're looking well.
Ah, absolutely. And now, tell me something about the Aotea Youth Symphony Orchestra. How long has it been running?
25 years. This is our 25th year. And 25 years ago, the then Mount Albert Borough Council came to me and said, look, we'd like to get a music group going in Mount Albert. How do you think you could help us? And I said, well, I'll start it up for you. And the only part that I didn't make provision for was getting somebody else to do the job after I'd got it going. So here I still am.
Isn't that the way? But obviously you enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, great.
So how many people are involved in the orchestra?
Well, currently there's about 100 young people in two orchestras. We got to the stage where we had to put together a learning orchestra underneath the main orchestra because there were a lot of younger people wanting to get in and learn about the orchestra and the wonderful things that can happen inside it.
Right. And how do you choose your players? Do you hold annual auditions?
Yes, we do. We audition annually, and so everybody's there on merit, not as of right. And, of course, within that group, there's quite a lot of diversity and talent. Some are very, very good, and some others are plodders, but it caters for everybody, and the talented ones go on to greater things.
Right. So when you advertise for the auditions, do you do that through schools, music schools, or
yes,
just
schools,
a bit wider?
Music teachers and the likes. We're never short of starters. You can actually audition on our or fill the audition form in on our website. That's how easy it is.
And what's your website address?
aotea.org.nz.
That's nice and easy.
Hmm.
And that'll also give you more information on the orchestra and what they're doing and where they're going, I guess.
Yep.
So what have they been involved with recently? Where have they been playing?
Well, we've been overseas in that 25 years many times. Last time to Germany a couple of years ago, we were very worried that we were taking coals to Newcastle, but the music that we took was very much appreciated, and it was a huge success. We've played on the QE2 about three times over the last 10 years or so, and on railway stations, Oneroa Beach, Matiatia, Murrah Hall.
And a new venue for you on the 30th of March will be down at the Marae, will it? Have you played there before?
Yes, we have. We did a concert down there about 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge success. It was a beautiful day like today, and everybody just sat around. Some of the people actually had their feet in the water to keep them cool.
I wonder if that'll happen on the 30th. Might be a bit cooler,
sure.
I think.
On the 21st.
It's the 21st. Where did I get the 30th from? I'm leading people astray. So it is the
21st.
It's the 21st, Saturday the 21st, and it starts at 2:30 with a potpourri,
Let's get the date straight. It's the 20th.
Saturday. So everybody, forget what we've just said. It's Saturday the 20th of March.
That's the one.
There's a wonderful concert done at the Marae. And the concert starts at 3, but prior to that there'll be a potpourri at 2:30. And I would think if you want to get a good spot, you need to be there even before that.
That's right.
Now, can you tell us something about the program?
Well, the program's really diversified because, of course, we've got David Paquette with us. And David and the orchestra have played many times together, also in concert. Our program will be ranging from a little bit of Beethoven, believe it or not, through to Rossini, to Pirates of the Caribbean, Lord of the Dance, Porgy and Bess, you name it, we got it.
Something for everyone.
Something for everyone, yeah.
That sounds great. And, of course, a lot of people will be very pleased to see David back on the island playing on the island. We've missed him.
We certainly have, yes. You know, those jazz festivals really were something very special and really haven't been replaced by anything of that sort of magnitude and island involvement, really.
No, that's right, but it all sort of got really large, and didn't it? It sort of got a life of its own.
Did you? Yeah. Like everybody went off for a holiday after it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Well, you were involved with the Jazz Festival right from the start, weren't you?
Just about. Not quite the first couple, but I just heard David's playing, and it was so energetic and full of beans that I just had no hesitation in going to him and saying, hey, listen, what can I do to help to get it? And, of course, Mr. Paquette, in his persuasive manner, allowed me to get into my, well over my depth into the thing. But I got my own back on him. One piano, one jazz festival that had Piano Heaven in it, which was a succession of pianists in it, and I was able to go out with some very long haired wig on and looking as much as I could like David and playing as much as I could like David. And fortunately, his mother was in the audience and she just about had a fit. She was so amused, but David wasn't, so he's never actually heard what went on. He's just heard about how it went on.
Yes, I did have the fortune to see that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Yes. Well, that was a great moment of the Jazz Festival. As in fact, you know, there usually was a great moment of each of the Jazz Festivals that stuck in the brain for one reason or another.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So where to from now for your Aotea Youth Symphony Orchestra?
Well, I'm sort of looking towards the exit plan for myself personally, because I'd like the thing to go ahead with some real firm sort of support, and it's had great support funding wise from everybody, ASB and the council and the likes, so there's no problem there. But it's a very, very time consuming sort of exercise, rehearsing and choosing repertoire, and couldn't be done without the fact that we've got a great committee behind us, and they change from time to time, and I think it's time for me to sort of get somebody else in the top seat. So that's the very most important thing. We're off to China next year. I think that might be my swan song.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Where will you be playing?
Well, we hope to play in China, in Shanghai. First of all, there's a very big thing going on next year, trade-wise, there with New Zealand, and we'll get in on the back of that. And then Beijing, we will also be playing in Beijing.
That's great. And you've been invited over there. Is that part of our trade?
Yeah, we have.
Because of our trade?
I think that's got a lot to do with it. It's not directly related to the trade initiatives, but by the time I finish with it, it will.
That sounds good. Hey, we could trade orchestras.
Oh, we could do that too, yes. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
The commitment to the orchestra for the players, is it a full-time commitment?
Well, it's sort of, it's not so much a full-time, but it's a prior commitment. It's a weekly rehearsal every Tuesday night. And we do about somewhere between 12 and 16 performances a year. So, you know, because there's no use practicing if you're not going to get out there and strut the stuff. And we are playing in the Town Hall in June with the Colorado Springs Youth Symphony, which is a big symphony that's coming down for a visit here. We sort of make sure that there's plenty of interesting performances for the kids to look toward. And one of our fellows is a very talented organist, and he'll be playing the refurbished Town Hall organ at that concert.
That'll be exciting for him.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It'll be a great stepping stone, I would think, for anyone who's really serious about their musical career.
Oh, yeah.
To get involved and move on.
Well, it is, because it teaches them the disciplines of the orchestra. And, you know, if you're going to play in an orchestra, you've got to sacrifice some of your individualist traits to make sure you fit in with the team. And we've got people now in reasonably high places, the NZSO and the APO, and quite a position, few positions overseas, in fact. So, yeah, we feel that we're doing something useful.
Yes, indeed. You must feel very gratified about that. I noticed that your patron is Kerry Te Kanawa.
She is indeed, Dame Kerry.
And does she have a sort of a hands-on role, or is she there?
Well,
do you see her at all? Or?
Yeah, well, yeah, we see her regularly. I certainly see her regularly because I'm on her foundation. But she is very interested in the goings-on of the orchestra and has been supportive of it virtually right from the beginning. We've always said that one of these days we're going to get her to come and sing with the orchestra, but that hasn't happened as of yet.
Right. So do you work in with her foundation, with the singers that she's fostering along? Do they sing with the orchestra?
We've looked at some of the outer parts of that. People that go on to the foundation are usually people that have proven themselves totally to be ready to face the ardours of working overseas, and so they're fairly well developed by the time they come to the foundation for assistance. But we've played with some of the ones that have progressed to that eventually, yes, before they get there.
Mm. Right. And of course you've got an illustrious career in music yourself, haven't you? You come from a musical background and musical family. And did you start out playing the piano? Or
piano first and then violin until I gave it up in exasperation at about 15. Which is what the orchestra is about. I reckon if I'd been in an orchestra, I would have kept on going. It's that time around about 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, where kids are saying, well, there's so many other interesting things to do. If we can take them through that, then they've got something for the rest of their life to enjoy the music, and so it sustains them through that period. And then I took up trumpet and played trumpet in just about every dive in Auckland, and piano in every dive in Auckland.
To earn a keep.
Sort of to help earn a keep.
Well, that probably while you were studying at university for your accountancy.
Well, that was a battle. My father was a chartered accountant, and although he'd paid good money to have me very well educated musically, he had some pretty strong ideas about which way my career was going to go. It veered in some ways, unfortunately, towards accountancy. So I kept on music as a sort of a second-hand part-time occupation.
Well, it seems to be a good balance.
Oh, yeah. Had a lot of time, a lot of fun, met a lot of people, wonderful people in the music game. Yeah.
So when you wind down from the AOTA Youth Symphony, that doesn't mean that you're going to retire from music, I hope.
Oh, God, no. No, I don't think anybody ever retires from music. They might retire from the odd involvement, but, you know, it's that sort of discipline that it doesn't die on you, you know?
Mm, right. And one thing I forgot to ask you about the orchestra, is it a full-sized orchestra?
Oh, yeah. Full symphony orchestra. There will be 50-odd kids there, I think, on Saturday.
Wow. So we better hope for good weather.
Hope for good weather, and if it isn't good weather, well, then we're off to the recreation centre.
Ah, right, as an alternative.
Yep.
So now that you've scribbled out all of those other dates that we told you in your diaries, just make sure you've got next Saturday, the 20th of March, in your diaries for the Mariah, if it's fine, or the Recreation Centre, if it isn't.
Yes.
Get there around about, I'd say get there about 2 o'clock to get a good
That's
seat.
The best idea,
and then there's a potpourri about 2:30, and the concert starts at 3 with the AOTA Youth Symphony Orchestra under the conductor Paul Harrop and special guest star David Paquette. I've been talking to Paul Harrop. Thank you very much, Paul, for coming in.
That's right,
and
it's great
we'll look
to see
forward
you
to seeing you next Saturday.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce Rob Varson, who's behind the auction and the artistic making of a clock. Welcome, Rob.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
A pleasure. Now, what a great idea. I gather you can buy a basic clock face from the Red Shed and then take it away and decorate it however you wish.
Yeah, well, when we started, we made a pamphlet, and we sort of the heading of the pamphlet was "All Artists, Tinkers, and Lateral Thinkers," and the important thing is the lateral thinkers, because we would like the people to create something different. It has to be your own ideas, your design. You could not necessarily use the hardboard base we supply, but that you could find something anywhere in your shed or anywhere in your house that you can think, oh, I can make a clock out of this, because we'd like you to be creative.
Right. So basically what you get for $12 is a hardboard square, is it?
Yes, a hardboard square.
With
that we supply the movement, the screw and the washer and the hands, so you can make basically a clock out of this.
That sounds brilliant. How many entries have you got so far?
We have over 150 people taken up the challenge, and we have a few more here, so we could get up to 200 people taking up the challenge. And every day people ring me and want, you know, 1 clock, 2 clocks. Some people take 4 or 5. It's amazing how successful it has been so far.
That's brilliant. And you've got some well-known artists involved as well, haven't you?
Yes, we have Mike Morgan, Don Stoddart, Alex Stone, Jackie Guthrie, Leon van Eyckel. These are some of the well-known artists. But there's many people that might not be well-known but have done some great clocks. I've seen some fantastic ideas that have already come in. Because you can start delivering to the Red Shed, or if you live in Onirua and you can't get there, you can deliver it to my house.
Right. Now, how did this idea come about?
How did it come about? Well, you know, most organizations need money, most trusts. And I'm on the committee of the Red Cross, on the committee of the CSA, and on the committee of the Red Shed. So I thought, if we can combine all three, that would be great. If I can think of something that could make money for all, and at the same time invite people to be creative. Because a lot of people say, oh, I can't paint, I can't do this, I can do that. But once you give them a challenge and a basic thing to start with, they discover that you can really do quite a lot of things that you didn't know you could do.
Right.
So
now, there's one organization you mentioned there that may not be familiar to people, the CSA. What is the CSA?
It's a community-supported agriculture. It's an organization where you become a member and you pay either upfront a sum or you pay so much per week. And they have a farm, a Timbuka Bay farm, where they employ a farmer part-time. And they grow nutrient-dense organic food, which gets divided every week by the organization to the members.
Hmm. That sounds pretty good. Now, are you an artistic yourself at all?
Well, I potter. A few odd sculpture, and I made a few clocks, of course.
Oh, you made a clock. Oh, that's good. That's good. Right. Now, to get to the nitty-gritty, people have got to the 30th sort of this month to get their entry in.
Yes. Yeah.
And then all the entries will be judged by a panel.
Yes, a group of the Red Shed members will do the judging, and we'll pick the 25 best clocks in our opinion, and they will be auctioned by Mike van Wagener as the auctioneer, and the rest will go on a silent auction. So that'll be the whole lot will be displayed in the Red Shed.
What day is this happening?
On the 3rd of April, on the Saturday.
The Saturday, that's Easter Saturday.
Yes,
what
from
time?
4 till 6.
4 till 6,
and
that sounds like a good time.
The auction itself starts at 5, so you have to be there early, and you get a glass of wine and a nibble to eat. And so you have a chance to watch all the clocks, and then you have a chance to bid on the best 25, but also, of course, you can do a silent bidding, because each clock will have a sheet underneath where you can put in your name and the offer you make, and if you like it more than someone else, you can increase the offer. And we hope, of course, to get some high prizes, because all these organizations need money.
Mm, absolutely. Now, is there an entry fee for people coming along to the auction?
No, everything is free.
Right.
The only income we have to begin with is the $12 entry fee, which will pay for the bits for the clock and pays for our basic cost of running the auction.
Right. And you said Mike Van Wagener is doing the auction, and he's good value at doing things like that.
Oh, he's a professional.
That's right.
The last auction he did in Waiheke was about a hospital, I think it was. They raised $130,000.
Mm. Yes, he's pretty
good. Well, you're not going to get anything like that, but you know, we hope to be able to make some money for all these organizations.
Well, I hope you do too. And I know some people are put off a bit by auctions because they think, oh, you know, that'll be out of my pocket, or I'll bid more than I intended to pay. And that can happen. But when you've got a silent auction, you've got that under control, because you just keep your eye on it. You put your bid in and then you go back and see if anybody's overbid you. And if they have, you think, oh, can I go another $10 or whatever? And I think that's great, because a lot of people who can't afford to be up there with the top bidders can afford to buy something and that they really like.
Yeah, and in some cases, people will buy their own clock back because they're so happy with the clock they've made. That I said, oh, should I put it in the auction? Should I keep it? But, of course, the idea is that when you enter, that it goes there to the red shed. Everybody can see it, and then you could buy it back.
Mm.
I mean, I've had people tell me, oh, I'll easily pay $100 for my own clock. I don't want it to go, really, but they're committed.
And
in a way,
that's great of them to be so generous, too, isn't it? To give their clock in the first place and then buy it back.
Yes, yeah. Well, generosity is something quite common to our Hackians.
It is indeed. We're a very generous community when it comes to raising funds for our societies and clubs and charities out there. We're very generous.
Yes, and also the volunteers. We have so many volunteers doing so many things. I mean, Tanya Bett is going to be the MC, going to tell a story about time that she wrote. Lovely story, by the way. And she does all these things without any payment, and the many people involved do everything. I have somebody just helped, which is Sophia Hoadley. She is going around to shops and talking shops into making clocks. So she went out for a short time and talked to six shops, and all six are going to make a clock.
That's brilliant.
And that'll become like a promotional item for the clock. They might even buy it back, or some other shop might buy theirs, or their friends, or.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea is growing, and I'm very pleased the way it has moved.
That's great. Now, prior to the auction on the 3rd of April, isn't it Saturday, the 3rd of April?
Yes.
Easter Saturday. People will have an opportunity to see them. They'll be on display somewhere?
The display opens at 10 o'clock in the morning.
So that'll be the first time they've all been together on display?
Yes, because we have to hang the exhibition, and then the Red Shed normally opens at 10 o'clock in the morning, which will be this day. So you can come in from 10 o'clock in the morning. But the official organization of having a glass of wine and having a nibble and all that starts at 4 o'clock. It's like a normal opening situation. It's the same as the gallery here. Now, the opening is at 6 o'clock, but you can walk in at 4 and look at the pictures. I mean, but we're trying to keep that in a restricted time, because you have to have people helping, and you can't have a large number of people helping all day. So.
That's true. Well, Rob, we wish you all the best for that. Now, just to remind people where they can drop off the clock, where they can buy the basic kit to begin with, and then where they can drop off their creation.
Well, if you see in the magazines, like in the Golf News and in the Marketplace, the details are there. You can pick up a clock at the Red Shed Saturdays and Sundays from 10 till 4, or you can ring me at 888-5, and I usually have quite a few at home. Lots of people have picked them up from my house and have dropped off some. I prefer them to go to directly to the Red Shed, but if people live around Oniroa and they want to drop them at my place, then that's okay. And I live at 27 Moa Avenue.
Excellent. Thank you, Rob. And just remind us which charities they're raising funds for.
The Red Cross gets 25%. The CSA gets 25%. The artist gets back 25% of the selling price. So they could pay for the clock. In other words, the $12 they paid, I might get back plus a profit. And 25% goes to the Red Shed. Because to put on this whole, what would you call it, clock venture. And also we want to do some work at the Red Shed. We want to develop more workshop space than we can give workshops for children like we used to do in the past.
Mm. That sounds brilliant. And what a great initiative. I think it's just something so different and out there that Waihekans will really get in behind it. Thank you, Rob Vassin, for coming in and talking to us about the Make a Clock auction down at the Red Shed.
Good. Thank you. Pleasure to do it.
Time now to introduce Glenda Andrew Neal. Welcome, Glenda.
Thank you, Jan. Nice to be here.
And you're running a compost course this afternoon.
I am. It's Create Your Own Eden, which is on this afternoon from 2 till 4 o'clock in the Ostend Hall where the market is indoors. I usually help them pack down so I can get set up ready.
That sounds great. So what's the format going to be and what's involved?
Well, it's basically a PowerPoint presentation which will cover the basics in traditional composting, worm farming and the bokashi composting. And then we take a small visit over to the community garden, which is literally 2 minutes walk behind the hall, just to see the worms in action and the bokashi buckets that they use. The community gardens have been taking the bokashi buckets from Cafe Get Stuffed for, I think it's nearly 3 years now. It's great. It's a great sort of model of how a business can interact with a community. We did a trial on that some years ago and it was very successful.
Now, for a gardening ignoramus like myself, mm-hmm. what is a bokashi compost heap?
Bokashi, the term is Japanese. It was developed in the 80s. And it simply means fermented organic matter. So it's a way of capturing the food waste, and instead of it putrefying, it actually ferments it. And that's returned to the ground to increase our soil. Because composting is all about increasing the soil. And one of my big passions, because I'm still a waste educator on Waiheke Island, is basically how to keep that food waste out of landfill. So, you know, choosing a composting system that suits you is a way of making a change. And I think a lot of people just need a little bit of support. And think, you know, a lot of people that come along have compost bins, but they're not working, or the worm farms, and they're not doing it quite right. So usually within a group, we have a group discussion, so we have a lot of fun.
Mm. No. Well, I've had my first experience with a bokashi system last Sunday when I caught up with my stepdaughter. And she's living in suburbia. She's got a little patio garden and a bucket on the patio with, you know, that she's doing this in. And I was amazed that there's really no smell to it.
No, it's a different system rather than the traditional one. Traditional is about hot composting. This one is, so it's cold because you're in a warm place, the microorganisms react faster. But basically, there is no odour, and it's for me, it's about getting rid of all that food waste so you can actually put your meat and your fish and your cheese and your dairy and your bread. You know, often those are the things you don't put in your traditional compost because you've attracted the rats. So there's still a small amount that people are composting that they're still putting in those red bags or their bins. So I personally like everything. You know, I think you can't have enough, because if you've got a yard, it's great. Worm farming's fantastic, especially if you've got children. They become great pets for the children, and they work very hard at recycling that food waste, and you get the benefits. And the bokashi, again, is, you know, it has its role.
Right. Now, with the course you're running this afternoon, how did you get involved with that?
Well, I've been the waste educator on Waiheke Island since 2002, and I did take a year out, and I took myself off to Thailand where I became a bokashi trainer, and I actually train a lot of the trainers now for Create Your Own Eden. I got involved with Create Your Own Eden as part of the support when I was working for the Waste Resource Trust. We, on a separate budget, we were able to run Create Your Own Eden courses, so I was trained to take those. And when the Waste Resource Trust obviously didn't get their contract with Auckland City reinstated in June last year, so I run them separately and I'm contracted to Auckland City, and I'm still the waste educator on the island, so it works quite well because I can have an opportunity to talk to people about what else is going on in the waste situation.
Right. Now, if somebody wants to go along this afternoon, first of all, is there a charge for it?
No, it's free. It's funded four times a year, usually within the seasons I run the courses. So it's free for the participants, and you can, if you're after a Bokashi bucket, you can get $20 off a bucket, and that's invoiced to Auckland City because part of the waste education. They have a separate budget for that within a whole lot of councils. So Create Your Own Eden doesn't belong to Auckland City. It belongs to a whole lot of councils, and they have adopted the program to fit into the waste education stream. So it's free, and you will have a booklet, and you'll be armed with websites to go and do some more investigations for yourself. So you have a lot of fun. We see a bit of practical demonstration going on, as I say, in the gardens. And there's usually someone who's probably more expert than me in the audience in certain situations. You know, I don't claim to be the expert in everything. So a little bit of group sharing is a lot of fun too. It's the way we learn.
Mm. And do people have to take anything along with them, a bucket or anything? Or?
No, nothing. Just bring yourself. I mean, if you want to purchase a Bokashi bucket, you'll need some money. They're 35 instead of 55, and you'll have your mix and it'll be enough to get you going. But you can also purchase a worm farm. I don't actually have the worm farms. Sandra does on the island. She sells them at the market, but if people buy through her after the course, there's a $20 discount on the worm farms as well.
Right. And can people just turn up today, or have they got to book?
You can just turn up. It would be great if you could text me even, or leave. I'm obviously not at home, so you could leave a message on my home phone, which is 7750, or you could text me on mobile 021 230 8472. It's just so I know for a bit of catering. I'll have a few cookies and tea and coffee. I think I've got a fairly full class now already, but I think a large group's sometimes quite nice. I think the largest group I've had is about 40, and we had a great afternoon. It was lots of fun. You know, people didn't feel like they were giving up their Saturday. They felt like they were gaining their Saturday, and they got very inspired. Just at the end of the course, Ken Clark from the Squarefoot Garden will pop in and get you motivated to take it from composting to the next stage, which is growing food. Mm-hmm. Growing your food, which in our so-called recession has been a necessity for a lot of people. So I'm happy to encourage people to get growing their food, and you know what you're eating when you grow your own food.
Exactly.
So it's always a good way to be, and I think a lot more people have turned to being more resourceful and are reaping the benefits.
Mm. Absolutely. Now, if people miss out on today's, or they can't make today's session, have you got another one planned in the future?
I haven't got a date for it, but it'll be in winter. So, as I say, it's four times a year. So, I'm doing the autumn one now, and the next one will be in winter. So, you can, or if you want to come and you want to go on the waiting list for the next one, I'm happy for you to call me and I'll just put you on the wait list. So, that was 7750. Just leave your name and phone number if I'm not answering the phone. And I'll put you on the wait list and give you a call when I've got a date for the next one.
Mm. Otherwise, keep an eye on Marketplace or Golf News.
Yes, that's right. They've been very supportive.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Glenda, for coming in. No doubt you want to head off and start getting that seminar together.
Preparations.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Glenda.
Jen.
We wish you well. And we've been talking to Glenda Andrew Neal, who's running a compost course this afternoon at the Ostend Hall, starting at 2 o'clock. It runs for a couple of hours. And if you want to give her a ring on that, she's on 372 7750, or text her on 021 230 8472.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
It's my pleasure now to welcome Rosalie from the library. Hello, Rosemary.
Hello, Jan, and good morning, everyone. And I was doing a laugh when you were saying about the weather and the showers. I had a long shower this morning myself and washed my hair and thought, oh, it's lovely knowing that I've got more water in the tank. And afterwards, I checked my rain gauge. Let's just say I should have checked the rain gauge before I had the shower. There wasn't even 0.1 in it.
Oh, darn. No, I think we really had a drought, haven't we?
Yes, it's. I may have to buy water, and that's very unusual for me.
Do you have a book in the library about rain dancing?
That's a point.
We could get that out of the library and sort of have a meeting down at Blackpool or on a little Onirara and do the rain dance to see if it works.
Right, I'm game. I'll have to have a look.
Okay.
But now, one book that kept me awake. Now, this hasn't happened for a long time because now I'm very sober and mature in my reading and I go to bed at the right time and so on. But the other night I was kept up till 2:30 reading Catherine Stockett's debut novel called The Help. All I can say is Kite Runner. Now, Kite Runner also kept me awake, and that was the last one, and that was years ago. The Catherine
Stockett kept you awake for the right reasons.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I just wanted to read it to see what had happened. Now, with The Help, it's a totally different book. It's set in America, 1960s Mississippi, the heart of the civil unrest, race riots, and nasty, nasty things happening between black and white. And anyone black who tried to overstep the line was severely stood upon, if not murdered. And in one case, even more dreadful things happened. So this is a girl who's a white woman, the daughter of plantation owners, who's a bit tall and not necessarily beautiful. So she comes home from college at age 22 and she hasn't got a ring on her finger, much to her mother's chagrin. And she's called Mosquita because her brother called her that because she was tall and had big eyes. And so the Mosquita is her name. And she dreams of writing, but she doesn't know what to write about. So she contacts a New York publisher and is told, write about what you know. And she has a mystery in her own home because she has a black maid called Constantine, whom she adored. Constantine has brought her up from when she was a wee girl because her mother was always too busy doing charity work and so on. And so she comes home and Constantine's not there. And her mother refuses to tell her, oh, it's none of your business sort of attitude. And that's it. And she thinks, I loved Constantine. Constantine wrote to me. What's happened? And it makes her think about the division, the unspoken laws between white and black. And you begin to see how she's beginning to appreciate the world of the black women and what they do quietly in the background, and how ironic it is that these black women are trusted to bring up the children, but they're not trusted to clean the family silver without it being counted. And it suddenly comes to her that this is an appalling state of affairs. So it's really her look, but it's not only her look, it's also two black women, two maids. So there's three different voices in the book. And the tension grows as Mosquita, using one of the son's ideas for a book, comes to write about the maid's experiences. And I won't tell you whether it's published or not or what happens, but as I say, it kept me chilled. It also made me laugh, absolutely, at times. And I love a book with a humour in it. But I would also say I think women will appreciate this book more than men do, simply because it's three women telling their stories. And it's not autobiographical, but I had to check because it was so much in that realm. It rang true so much to me. So do put your name down for The Help by Catherine Stockett. That's my big recommendation.
And Catherine Stockett is an American
woman, quite young, and this is her first book.
First novel.
Yes,
wow.
And it's it is wow.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's got to be wow to really grab somebody who's in the business, as it were.
I read a lot of books.
And read a lot. You could almost perhaps get a bit ho-hum about things at times, and to get one that really socks you like that, it's got to be good.
Yes, yes, it has.
Yeah. Mm. Now, you also want to talk about the New Zealand Book Awards.
If I could, because this year I think the books that have been put forward are just wonderful. big stars. For example, in the picture books, you've got Cowshed Christmas. Now, I remember reading this one at story time at Christmas. It's Joy Cowley, who is hardly known overseas, and yet she is so good. She's so wonderful at realizing the rhythm at stories, and she knows exactly what will appeal to children. And also, it's been illustrated by Gavin Bishop, and I think he is so talented. So that's Cowshed Christmas. It's such a New Zealand book. It's going to be going over to my family in Seattle this Christmas. So if you know anyone who's got family, were Kiwis and they've gone overseas at Christmas, that could be a book to send them. Then there's also Old Huhu, and when I read this, I felt tears come to my eyes. It's such a wonderful appreciation of death. Now, that sounds a weeny bit odd, but believe me, it's the most beautiful explanation of death. And I just think it's just beautiful. It's so different from Cowshed Christmas. How are they going to judge? I don't know. And then one I've also read at story time, to great delight of the children, is Wonky Donkey. The Wonky Donkey he's wonky because he's missing a leg, and he's a stinky wonky donkey, and so on. And it just gathers, you know, a bit like the house that Jack built. It's a brilliant, brilliant book to read to the family, and also to sing, because this is a CD and Craig Smith sings it. It won a special music book award last year, just after it came out. It just fitted into that, but it's up against some stiff competition here. And of course, our very own Margaret Mahi with Word Witch. I mean, the level of these books is just international, five star, and here they are going to be placed against one another. I'd like to give those four the whole prize, you know.
Right. And what category was that?
That's the junior picture book.
Junior picture book.
Yes.
Right.
And then, of course, it goes on and to so many of the others. And the competition is so stiff this year. So New Zealand Post, it was just announced. The nominations closed, I think, about October, and they just released the final judging list. So now we have to wait to see how the judges are going to pick. I'm very glad I'm not a judge, because it would be so difficult.
Right, and no doubt you'll be talking to us about different other categories later on.
Yes.
When are the awards supposed to happen? When do we know who's won?
Well, these were announced on the 4th of March, and I'm sorry, I think it's in June or July, because the children have to vote, don't they, for their favourite too, so you could tell the children about that.
How do they do that, do you know?
Yes, we have some forms, and they can, I believe, get some at the post office too.
Oh, okay.
And
so there's
some
voting
of the schools
forms,
would know too.
Right, voting forms in the library and the post office, and I guess online.
Yes, probably. New Zealand Post Children's Book Awards.
Right.
And you can read the full list there too. So if you are interested in buying a book for a child, do look at them, because each one's got a little blurb about it. And so it can help you with that. And, of course, our own Janet Hunt has been nominated for the non-fiction award with the E3 Come Home.
Mm.
That's quite a delightful book too, the story of the Godwits flight.
Yes. Is that a book that's suitable for children?
Oh, yes.
Mm. So she actually did design it for children. Okay.
But I think the adults will have fun reading it too and thinking about it, because it is amazing. Those tiny weeny birds, and they actually tagged some, so they were able to know what happened. And E3 was one of the ones they tagged, and there's a photograph of E3 and disappeared. And they say, well, where did you go? And one of its mate went to Papua New Guinea, I think it was. And they thought, oh, we didn't know they went there. And so I won't tell you what happens, but yes, E3 Come Home, Janet Hunt, who's so well known.
Non-fiction. It is a non-fiction. It does have a little bit of a fictional
story. Yes, it's true. Janet went over to, across the water, straight across the water to I want to say Miranda, but and they tag the birds and send them off.
But she would have put a little bit of her imagination into what E3 actually did while he was away or she was away.
Well, she stuck fairly close to the facts, which is quite wonderful, and what happens, yes.
And, of course, you've got all these wonderful books in the library, haven't you?
Of course we have, yes. Lots and lots of wonderful books. But, as I say, my big recommendation this week is to look at the children's picture books, and you can order them and make up your own impression, and also to put your name down for The Help by Catherine Stockett.
Now, Rosalie, do you still have the children's storytelling?
Yes, we do. Tuesday at 10 o'clock and also Thursday at 10 o'clock.
Right.
And that's fun. It really is. It's mainly meant for the preschoolers, and it's a great way for some of the mums to come on the island and meet some of the other mums too, which gives you, you know, you've got the children in common at that similar age. So we have them from babies right up to almost five.
Okay.
And because, of course, the others are at school. Mm. Occasionally we have a couple of the slightly older homeschool children too, but it is designed for the little ones.
Mm. Now, the children's section of the Book Awards, what age range is that?
Probably goes from, well, picture books, you can, you know, sort of like I read three of those stories to the children, and as I said, they're under five, so you can read them if the child is able to themselves. But I had great joy in reading The Cowshed Christmas to these little ones at Christmas, and of course they could appreciate the gumboots and the black singlets and the pukekos wandering around too. That's what I love about Gavin Bishop, is he just picks out the little details that make us different without being obnoxiously different.
It's good that we're getting our own New Zealand genre.
Yes.
We're allowing our own characters to come through to our
I remember literature. Many, many years ago talking how poetry in the books reflected the growth of New Zealand, like the colonial era was looking back towards England or Ireland and Scotland. And then about the 50s, it started coming, more people were born here. Like in my own family, I'm fifth generation on one side and third on another. So I'm totally Kiwi, and when I write, I hope, without being consciously Kiwi, because it's coming through me without my even trying. Of course, we do have books which are consciously Maori, and that's filling another niche altogether. And the Old Huhu is one of those books which is available in Maori, and I believe it was done originally in Maori, and it's, as I say, it's just exquisite.
I've noticed recently, sometimes I wake up quite early on a Saturday or Sunday morning and I tune into the national program.
You're
their,
allowed.
Their story time, you know, between 6 and 7, I think it is. And gone are the days of Diana and the Golden Apple and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
And it's, I think, 99% local.
Yes, and it's very good.
They have some stunning stuff.
Love to.
Absolutely.
Totally recommend it.
Yeah. Mm. Really good story.
Yes.
And it's quite a heavy Māori accent to some of the stories.
Yes, and that's how it should be.
But they're great. Mm. You know, and they really bring things to light that you'd never even thought of, you know, and told in such a brilliant way.
Yes.
I'm really impressed with our short story writers now. I think it's really great.
Wonderful. Our New Zealand writers, one stage I hardly liked reading New Zealand writers because so many of them were just full of depression and terrible things happening, and I thought, that's not my life. So I tended to write on a much lighter scale. But everybody's different, and I think now we're getting this wonderful variety. But our picture books, of course, led by the inimitable Margaret Mahe many, many years ago, they've just done wonderfully, wonderfully well.
They have indeed. Well, we'll hold our interest until we know who's won that that prize for the
junior picture books.
Yes. Do they have a senior picture books?
Oh yes. They have. Well, it's not counted as senior picture. It's just, you know, sort of more books on junior and senior and intermediate level. So they do categorise them.
Mm. Oh, that's good, because I was thinking when you were talking about the picture book category, that it would be very hard to judge
a chapter book as
opposed
to
that appealed to a 5-year-old as appealed to a 12-year-old. Yes. That would be very difficult. So I'm glad that there's more than one category. Yes. And then you get to the adults, which I guess we call coffee table books, don't we?
Oh, indeed. There are some of those too.
Yes. Well, it's great to see you again, Rosalie. Thank you for coming in and sharing your enthusiasm for books.
Oh, that's my joy.
It's my very great pleasure to welcome Carol Weitzel. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
All right, you've come along to talk to us about a play that's on at Artworks this afternoon at 3 and tonight at 7, called Seven Jewish Children, A Play for Gaza. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, I'll tell you when I first saw it. I was... children and grandchildren are Americans, and I was visiting, and I saw it in Jersey City. And Carol Churchill, who is the author, is a major British playwright. And even though this play is quite short, it is really powerful. And she'd put it forward to get discussion going, information out there about the, at that point it was massacre in Gaza. This was a year ago now. And I brought it back to the island because I thought, why hecky would do this? And here we are, we're doing it.
That's brilliant. How did you find the right people for the part?
Not easily. Not easily at all. We put out the word, it's been a while ago now, and we had people who came in and who were interested. The difficulty being it is a very difficult play. Even though it is short, it's looking at realities that are extremely painful. And so people were very much interested but somewhat unsure that they could take it on. So the people who did decide that they would be involved, I can say, are people of courage and conviction.
Absolutely. How long is the play?
It actually, if we were just doing the words, it would be 10 minutes. But what we've done is, with the help of Scott Ewing, who is one of our island's experts in this whole area of video and film, he's involved with the process, and so he, with real collaboration with the cast, has put together video clips that accompany the performance, because even though it's short, it covers seven periods of Jewish history. So it's the video give us footage from when Jewish people were being herded into camps in Europe, to the present, where they are caught in the most horrible dilemma of having been an oppressed people, become oppressors themselves. So the video footage really helps in organising the audience's understanding of what the words entail.
Right. I noticed that you're offering at the end of the play a general discussion and time to share thoughts on it. there might be some people who feel a bit intimidated by that, that they may have to participate in a discussion that they're not really qualified to. Or is this going to be a relaxed sort of thing where you can comment if you want to, or you could just sit and listen if you want
Most certainly. And what we've been able to do, and that wasn't easy either because people have their commitments, but we've been able to assemble a group of people who will act as a panel. And it was noted in Golf News that Klaus Bosselman will be part of that, Peter Rickies, Jan Dufree, who is a major political figure off of Waiheke. She was instrumental in setting up Poverty Action, which has to do with poverty in New Zealand and its effect on children. And she's part of a group which is organised for social justice in Palestine. So we will have people there who are very well informed, and the purpose of the play is to get this information out, because mainstream media, we get bits and pieces and it isn't by any means the full story.
That's a problem with our media though, isn't it? There's a couple of big multinationals that run it, and we get told what they want us to hear.
Yeah, that's exactly so. And this is why a small local radio, as we have on Waiheke, is so valuable. And I mean, Golf News, for instance, and the Marketplace itself, these are media where we are so lucky on Waiheke. I mean, we're fortunate on Waiheke in so many ways that we do get alternative information. Mm. We are just trying to focus that information in this place of the play this afternoon and then at 7 o'clock. So it'll be 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock when we're doing this.
What are you hoping will come out of the group discussion afterwards?
Well, one of the reasons that provisos that Carol Churchill made the play available was that it is a free event, but a collection is taken up for medical aid to Palestine, because the destruction and that is wrought by the occupation of Palestine means that medical aid is not reaching. And so this is a way that people can actually contribute to some real help to the people and children of Gaza. So that I think is a major. We'll also have groups and organisations will be that made available that people can become involved in and take some of the steps that are necessary to give support. Because the difficulty for the people is that, well, they've been enclosed with a wall, a physical wall, but there's also a wall of silence and misinformation that we are trying to break. So this is a way in which we'll give people the contacts that they can engage in their own way. It's particularly important that people be aware that this is opening up and making available. This is by no means that you are required
The playwright is American, is she?
No, she's British. She's a major British playwright, Carol Churchill. She's probably a dame of the British Empire by now because she's been writing since the 70s. And she's known for her particularly... she's been a feminist. I don't know if you remember Top Girls. It was on at Mercury back in the 70s. Oh, right. And she's done that sort of play. And she's prolific. They just keep coming. And so what we have is just a superb piece of theatre. And as we've worked with it, and the people who are the actors, the players, are amateurs. And this is, Carol Churchill made this play available to amateurs. So what you find in working with it, it's still absolutely superb. She is a major playwright. And this is a gift. It's a gift to the Palestinians, and it's a gift to amateur theatre as well.
Do we know what prompted her to write the play?
It was about a year ago. I'm bad on dates, so I won't try. But it was a year ago now that there was a major assault on Gaza, and... I don't have figures, but there was a huge new push on moving people out of their homes and leveling them, and an intensification of the measures that have turned it into an apartheid state. Mandela himself has come out publicly and said that that Palestine is an apartheid state, and as you'd be aware, to shift that sort of reality is very difficult indeed. And there's an extra dimension to apartheid in Palestine, is that in South Africa, the people were not being moved out. But in Palestine, right from the beginning, from the 40s, when the British turned over that that area to Israel, it's been a constant process of moving people out and levelling their homes and putting in place checkpoints, and there's two systems of roads that the Palestinians can use one system and the Israelis can use another, and Gaza is divided up by the wall in so many ways.
Mm. Coincidentally, I mentioned earlier on what's on at the cinema this weekend, and tomorrow there's a movie on called Knowledge is the Beginning, which is about the East-West Divan Orchestra that Daniel Barenboim started up. That's got Israeli, Syrian, Lebanese, Palestinian, Egyptian young people in it. And that is just amazing how they can get together and be and like each other and break down the barriers through music. But politically, it's so difficult to do.
That is most beautiful movie. And I'd just say that it's not coincidental. Waiheke Cinema and Lynn Stewart has cooperated with us. Tuesday last, Palestinian 101, I may not have that correct, but that was showing at the Doco, and now we have the beautiful film with Barenboim and Edward Said, which is I really recommend it highly.
Absolutely. Yep. I saw it at the cinema here probably about a year ago, I think, when it first screened, and I can't remember the last time I actually cried in a movie.
I had tears running down my face. I'm getting tearful as you talk about it.
And yet it's a moving, not, don't feel put off by
not
that, because
at all.
It's because there's so much hope in there. if you can just get through the politics of things. That wonderful address that Barenboim gave to the Knesset was stunning, you know. Mm. And but you know, just washed over them. They're going to do what they want to do, and that's it.
Yes, you know, and this is why the politics are not going to go away, and why we have engaged politically by offering to Waiheke and New Zealand. Actually, we're the premier. Waiheke is the premier of this play in New Zealand, and so this is a chance to get involved with. Thank you.
No, I'm just going to say, you're listening to Waiheke Radio, and this is Island Life, and we're talking to Carol Wetzel, who is the producer of a play that will be on at Artworks this afternoon at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. called Seven Jewish Children, a play for Gaza. Now, the title, does that relate to the seven stages of the Jewish...
Yes, that's what makes this play so powerful. It follows and focuses on seven periods of Jewish history. And the first is when there is essentially the Anne Frank story. And then it moves through returning from the Holocaust and finding everything gone, and then the Exodus, and arriving in Palestine and realizing that this is not an empty land, and then the final is having the Gaza assault happening. They're in it, and and it's on television in front of them. And why I was particularly drawn to this play, it's a group of adults who are wrestling with the impossibility of talking to their children about the terrible events that they are part of. And I have a background as a child psychotherapist, and so I recognized immediately that this message was how that children suffer and will continue to suffer because of adults' difficulties in grappling with the horror that surrounds them. And so this is, unfortunately, and it's known, and people appreciate it, and it's hard to understand, but unfortunately what we have is an oppressed people who in their turn become oppressors. And this is a terrible situation for the Jewish people to be in. So the beauty of the play is that it's putting forward how that this has developed despite the very best intentions of people to make a better life for their children.
I suppose sort of putting it a bit crudely, could you equate it to an abusive family, for instance, a child growing up in an abusive situation, that they're going to perpetuate that? If you grow up in a family that has got a background, a political background of suffering, and it just perpetuates itself.
Yeah, I think that's a very apt comment.
So how do we break the cycle?
Yes, it's a... I've been thinking about that myself, and I haven't actually talked with my colleagues on this, but there's a way in which generosity, and this is true, within Israel there is a very significant minority who are well aware that unless they join and understand the situation of the Palestinians and create an Israel that is inclusive, that isn't apartheid, that they and their families will suffer and their children will suffer. And it there is a parallel with abuse. It's the, and unfortunately, what, and you've touched on it, and I'm really pleased you have, that when we see abuse in families, we focus on those families as the problem. But in fact, it's the society in which the families are attempting to raise their children well that sets up the conditions under which parents will abuse their children. And so that's where I think it makes a very apt parallel indeed. And because not laying blame is a key. I'm thinking of when this may seem to be a long bow, but America in its funding of the Israeli state is contributing to what is happening there. I mean, it itself runs a war economy, and it is very important to them that they have allies within the region, and unfortunately Israel has ended up to be their ally. So I'm thinking of 9/11 actually, and how my children are Americans and were close to where it was happening, and my response, my feeling was, and I come from anti-war background, was that this was a marvelous opportunity for America not to retaliate, to shift things onto that frame where we don't return eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, where we include all in the love that we have for our children and family. And so this is what offers still for us in the Mideast.
Yes, that is, of course, a complication for in that situation. Is that it's not just the Israeli people that are involved. There's a lot of political interference from outside.
Yes, I mean, it's central in geopolitics, absolutely central. And unless it is able to shift and become the promised land of peace and plenty for all, then the rest of the world is also very much affected by what happens in Israel. And I'm reminded as we speak that it is a nuclear power. And New Zealanders, who have made their stand so strongly in the anti-nuclear area, I feel this is our struggle as well.
Indeed. Well, Carol, I think this this play this afternoon is going to be very thought-provoking, and we should encourage as many people as possible to come along to it. Is it suitable for younger people?
I don't think it's suitable for children, and because it's actually about adults struggling with how do you tell children. It takes the form of a refrain of tell, don't tell, and that gives the indication that the adults themselves are caught in this terrible trap of how can you talk with children about impossibilities. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. We've been talking to Carol Wetzel, who has produced a play called Seven Jewish Children, a play for Gaza, which is on this afternoon at 3 p.m. and tonight at 7 p.m. at Artworks. And we encourage everyone to get along there to see it. Entry is by Koha, and it will be, I think, a very thought-provoking play. Thank you for coming in, Carol.
Thank you very much, Jan. I appreciate this opportunity.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.